Welcome to the Supercoach Champions podcast with your hosts, Wilfred Z, Joe Fitz, and other Supercoach champions.
Welcome back to the Supercoach Champions podcast. It's Wilfred here. You might know me better as Catfish. If it's your first time listening, look, I won Supercoach a long, long, long time ago. It's ancient history now, but I'm still here. I love playing Supercoach, still massive Supercoach nerd. Obviously love my footy first and foremost though, but yeah, still here to chat Supercoach. Hopefully you can share some of my thoughts on all things Supercoach, offer my two cents, but I guess from the perspective of someone who, you know, has navigated all the tough bits and pieces of winning Supercoach once. Again, obviously, every season's different, but I'll maintain there's certain things that you don't really get and understand about Supercoach unless you've actually been right at the top, having to navigate those final few rounds or navigate the really tough parts of the season where you're trying to climb up the ranks sooner, work through the buys. That, yeah, ultimately, someone who's been able to do that successfully most likely can offer a little bit of a more unique insight into this game that we obviously know and love called Supercoach. So yeah, here we are. I'm flying solo today, so we are still going to try to get two episodes out a week, but yeah, I'll be honest, the former champions, they're a busy lot, so it's just a matter of whether we can line up the schedules to match up and when they can jump on, obviously. So we'll definitely be hearing from Tim and also Matt at various stages, hopefully be able to grab Joe Nadav at some points as well, but yeah, it will just really come down to when everyone's available. So yeah, you're stuck with me, just me today. We're going to do the usual, crunch some numbers, chat some strategy, chat a little bit about captaincy, and I will confirm as at this current point in time, Thursday morning, what my team is. So let's get stuck into it.
Let me clue you in. We need a numbers guy. Get Wilfred.
I don't know if I really feel like I am truly a numbers guy. Maths was never my strongest subject in school, but hey, I don't mind a deep dive into some numbers now and then, so I guess that maybe qualifies me. But anyway, we do have to shout out again our good friend Carl McGrath Accounting, who is responsible for this segment, crunching the numbers. If you want to make sure you're not fudging your numbers when it comes to your taxes, make sure you get Carl to help you out. So for the first deep dive into the numbers for 2024, I wanted to focus on a topic that I feel is quite critical for a lot of people in terms of helping them decide how they want to structure their teams. You know, one of the things that a lot of people have been focusing on is going, you know, the cheaper route at front row forward, thinking that there's limited upside and, yeah, that it's not worth paying up for players in that position. That seems to be a common take that gets repeated year on, year off. So not saying that in itself is wrong. I just wanted to look at, I guess, specifically for 2024, because I think one of the key things for this year is that people are, again, trying to save money in the forwards. So a lot of people, you know, skipping guns in the front row forward and second row forward. And a lot of the money is obviously firstly being focused in the halves and the fullbacks, but then the next area that people are targeting and paying up for is often at the center wing position. And I get it, right? Because we all want upside. And the name of the game for Supercoach the last few years is being able to find that upside play. And it makes sense that center wing is often where that biggest volatility lies, so that you can find the, you know, 30, 40, sometimes 50 average player as far as their round one starting price tag, with the hope that they're going to come out and blitz it and give you a 90 average or even a 70, 75 average, which is obviously a massive win if you're paid like the equivalent of a 50 average for their starting price. Now, for further context, the reason I started diving into this was because, you know, I was wrestling with the decision on paying up for Payne Haas, who was priced as effectively around a 73, 74 average, or otherwise paying up for, you know, like a Greg Marju, Val Holmes, Ruben Garrick, one of those guys who are sitting around a 75 average in the center wing, give or take a few points, right? Because that was effectively the decision a lot of people were making. They were going cheaper at front row forward, say, you know, trying to find that, say, 450, 500, 550,000 dollar front row forward to pair with a Marju, a Val Holmes, a Garrick, or someone like that, effectively. Whereas you know, the other way is obviously you look at paying up for Payne Haas and then pairing them with a $450,000 centre wing instead. So I was looking at this previously, and one of the things I mentioned in an earlier episode of the Supercoach Champions was that in the opening five rounds in 2023, Payne Haas came out an average of had a five-round average of 81. And I mistakenly said that in the opening five rounds, only one centre wing averaged more than that 81. And I realised afterwards that my mistake was because, well, sorry, firstly, that centre wing was Jacob Carraz, who had an 86 average after that first five games. But I realised that because last year we had our first taste of weekly buys, I hadn't actually sorted so that, you know, my cutoff was you had to have played five games, except obviously someone like a Ruben Garrick, who had an 86 average after the first five rounds, missed round two because of the round two bye. He had a four-game average of 86. And it also didn't include one Greg Marju, who wasn't in the team in round one and didn't start playing until round four. So, I mean, you could argue his two-game average of 112 probably isn't quite fair, but, yeah, obviously it kind of skews the numbers a little bit. I mean, even Morgan Harper had a one-game average of 90. So, yeah, probably not counting him in this list. I have left Marju in there because, obviously, his ongoing numbers were absolutely elite as well. So I do think he fits into the list a little bit better than a Morgan Harper. But, yeah, so I've set the cutoff at a 60 average. And from the first five rounds, there were 18 centre wings that hit that mark. And that obviously ranges from Marju with his two-game average of 112, Garrick's four-game average of 86, Kiraz's 86 from five games, Lockie Miller's 80 from five games. And yeah, slowly goes down from there. The first thing I will point out is from the top 10 most expensive centre wings to start off in round one last year, only two of the top 10 didn't make this list of the top 18. So I think on a whole, you think, well, that's great. You know, if you're paying up for a centre wing, based on last year, 80% of those guys paid off for you. So the names that missed out was Alex Johnston and also Stephen Crichton. And I think you can find narratives to support why. I think from memory, we knew the Rabbitohs had a really tough draw from the start with. That was a reason why Cody Walker was a massive avoid. And obviously AJ is very tied to him and Latrell's performance. So yeah, AJ made sense. He didn't make the cut for that reason. But when you dig a little bit deeper, what's really quite interesting is that aside from Ruben Garrick, and to a lesser extent, Campbell Graham. And I guess you could throw in Nick Meaney as well, although we, again, know Nick Meaney's situation is quite unique because of the role he got to play. But, yeah, you dig into it, basically, all the top price guys. So, again, from this list, the most expensive options were Val Holmes, Campbell Graham, Nick Meaney, Ronnie Mulitalo, and then we moved to, like, Isaac Tonga, guys like that. Basically, Garrick and Graham aside, everyone else was flat out just matching the price they started at in terms of their average. And especially Val Holmes, even though he made the top list here, he only averaged 61 over the first five games. And he came in, obviously, worth a lot more. He was priced at a 69 average. So you were disappointed, basically. Now, to look at the other end, so from this top list, you know, you also had three guys who were less than 500,000 as their starting price, and that was Hamiso Tabuai-Fido at 330k, and then Jermaine Sarko at 383k, and then you had Jackson Paulo at 457k. They obviously far exceeded their price tag early on. I mean, Sarko had a five-round average of 78 out the gate. The Hammer had a 63 five-round average, and both obviously went on to make bucket loads of cash across the season. And Jackson Paulo, obviously a little bit different for his situation since he kind of subbed in and out of the team, but he started off with a 76 average as at the end of round five. Although, again, that was from only four games. Look, I probably need to stop the numbers diving here before I lose everyone, but I think the key thing I've highlighted from doing this exercise is that, firstly, the premium guns that you pay up for, you know, assuming there's no changes to their role and their team's still good, all of that type of stuff, more likely than not, you're going to get a top center wing option. So like I said, you know, 8 out of the 10 most expensive center wings to start the season last year did end up in that top 18, you know, 60 plus average come end of round 5. So they started up well enough. The problem is only 3 or 4 of them actually did better than what you paid for them at the start. and you know, a few others just barely matched what you paid for, and the others, you know, were still one of the top center wings after the first five rounds, but they had scored worse than what you'd obviously paid for. So, you know, they'd lost money and they weren't returning value for that cash. So the difficulty between that is, you know, for example, you could have paid a premium price, let's say over 600K, to get what turned out to be a top 15 center wing after five rounds. And that's great, don't get me wrong, but they've lost value, and there's every chance that some of the cheaper guys you could have gone with around the 350, 400, 450 bracket could have, you know, not quite matched that top 15 rank, but maybe they were top 20 or top 25, but cost 250,000 less. And then that's where, I guess, you know, without diving into the front row forward numbers, that's where if you paid up for someone like a Payne Haas, Joey Tarponet, whatever, they basically gave you what you paid for or even did better in Payne Haas's case last year. So in those situations, I guess that's where you can absolutely get it right. You know, you picked Ruben Garrick, you got center wing, keeper, premium guy that smashes it out with the opening round average of 86 or whatever, and gives you better value than what you paid for, is a pod, does awesome. Or you could accidentally choose the Val Holmes of last year, where, again, they're not performing horribly because they still were a top 18 center wing, averaged over 60, et cetera, but, you know, lost 8-9 points of value. He was the second most expensive center wing, and then ends up, you know, being outperformed by a good 16 or 17 other guys, varying costs, some that were far cheaper than him. So, all right, yep, I've got to stop rambling about numbers and center wings and all that type of stuff now. Hopefully that gives you something to, you know, think about, take out of it. It certainly helped me shape a little bit more about what I'll plan to do, and hence why I've got Payne Haas in my team, and I've got a lot of cheaper center wings in my team, just taking the punt that I'm going to be able to bank the 70 plus average from Haas, and then hopefully nail the right center wing, you know, roughies that will be, you know, maybe a price that are 35 to 40, 45 average even, and give me a 55 to 60 average in response. So fingers crossed I can get those right, and then I feel like overall that'll benefit my team. But anyway, make sure you get in touch with Carl if you need help with your taxes, if you haven't lodged your tax returns, for example. Yeah, Carl's going to do you right. He's going to legally maximize your tax refund, whether it's just basic tax return or you're getting into accounting for things like rental properties, capital gains on share trading, even crypto. Carl can help you out and record everything correctly. There is no job that's too big or too small, whether, again, it's a small individual tax return right through to businesses run through companies, partnerships, or trusts. Carl can help you out. And even if you need more than just a tax return, Carl can help you out with all aspects of accounting, like BAS lodgements and data entry. Just get in touch with Carl. You can find him at Carl McGrath Accountant on social media. Or if you are struggling to find him, just DM us and we'll point you in the right direction.
Good morning, Captain.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the captain speaking.
Aye, aye, Captain.
I'm Captain Jack Sparrow. Savvy?
All right, so obviously we talked a lot about captaincy last year. It is obviously critical. It can make and break your week. And yeah, look, let's dive into it. Just, I'm working obviously off the captaincy percentages based off Supercoach Gold or Supercoach Plus. Sorry, I keep forgetting it. Old habits. And yeah, look, it's interesting. Right now, Nathan Cleary, most popular captain percentage at 24.6. Against the Storm, I guess you normally would think, yeah, that's pretty bold. But when you think about it, he's obviously, you know, in 47.9% of teams. Storm now most likely don't have Cam Munster and, you know, new combinations, et cetera, et cetera. So I get it. I can certainly understand him being popular there. Second most popular name, you've got Kalen Ponga, obviously 21.8% and 37.6% of teams. So again, that also makes sense. Look, I'm all aboard this. He's locked in as my captain already. He's got a great record against the Raiders. In fact, you know, his last five scores are fantastic. You know, you look back, 122 last year, then 2022, he had an 86. Then you go back to 2021, 107, 98. And then in 2020, obviously, different time, but 159. Those are his last five scores. So he hasn't had any duds in there at all. And the only low score he's had against them is actually a 24 back in 2019. And then going back one more year, 93. So, yeah, that's a great record against the team. And you think about the Raiders this year, they have obviously a new 5'8". They've got Timoko still in the centers, but I think he may have swapped sides. So you've got Hopoate and then Kotrick and Savage, and you've got Rapana playing fullback. So that is a lot of different combinations in the back. Then you throw in no Elliot Whitehead. You've got a new lock in place. No Corey Horsburgh, obviously. There's just so many moving parts here that I kind of think the Knights, who are relatively settled, they obviously do have some changes on their end as well, with Dom Young moving on, and they've obviously got Tuala there. They've got a new left edge with Fitzgibbon gone. So there's certainly changes on their end, but out of the two teams, they're far more settled. So yeah, the history, the how good Ponga's looked in terms of like all the chat out of the preseason is that he's supremely fit this year. He's had a really good preparation. I'm all over this, hey. I'm really keen on Ponga as captain, and I feel really confident about that. So apologies in advance to anyone I've cursed just then by talking up Ponga so much. But yeah, look, he's my captain. I know it's a Thursday night, but it's not the first game of the round. Yeah, maybe that'll break the curse. Who knows? Next popular name here is Nico Hines. He's obviously in 29.4% of teams and 8.8% rather, captaincy at the moment. So that is, you know, for Nico Hines, criminally low. And I get it, you know, it's the questions over his quad. I mean, he's come out and confirmed if he's playing, he's kicking. So I don't have any concerns there. Look, I don't really have any issues. I think Nico will go great. The only question is, obviously, he's playing the Warriors in New Zealand. Maybe that's a little bit tougher for them, but yeah, no worries from my side. Afterwards, it's all pod picks. I mean, Reece Walsh has already played. He was the next most popular captain at 3.8%. And then SJ, 3.1%. It's a little bit risky, but I don't mind it. Again, at home against the Sharks. Payne Haas at 2.8%. Scotty Drinkwater next up is 2.7% against the Dolphins. Quite like that, actually. So that's obviously one for the risk takers. Drinky in 8.2% of teams as well. Tommy Turbo, if you locked him in from the outset, you wouldn't be too upset. You'd be a little bit sad that he didn't, you know, hit 130 like he probably should have once those tries weren't taken off him or whatever. But yeah, 2.7% captaincy. Afterwards, it's all just really, really pod options. So if you don't want to go with one of the other more popular options, Dylan Brown at 1.6% with 24% ownership against the Bulldogs. I actually think that's a sneaky good one. He's fairly safe overall. But yeah, I think all things considered, it's hard for me to go away from Ponga this week or Nico Hines. And again, totally understand why you would just lock in Cleary, because he's so safe, just so safe and reliable. Yeah, it's not a complicated week for captaincy, I think. Especially early in the season, you want to play it somewhat safe. But yeah, I know there's some risk takers out there who want to go for the glory from round one. So good luck to you if that is you.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Look, it's round one, obviously. We are finalizing our teams. We're freaking out. I know exactly how you all feel. I'm in the thick of it just like you are. There's not too much strategy chat, I think. It's really just about making sure your team's set up properly, that you got everything nailed down. Look, general reminder. So again, first and foremost, make sure if they're starting early in the round, they're in your starting squad, even though they might be. So for example, Morgan Smithies, he's well and truly my, you know, 16th, 17th player this round. He's in my starting second row because he's playing the first game, you know, on Thursday night. Even though Helam Lukey, I would rate him to be much ahead of Smithies as a prospect in terms of his scoring, whatever. But he's in the last game of the round. He's on my bench. He's got the reserve armband on. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's, you don't have to overthink that. Same with Jack Bostock. He's probably in the reserves. The only time you would put anybody playing later in the round, you know, in your starting lineup is if you want to captain them. So that's why Tommy Turbo was my reserve and Kellen Ponga with the orange armband on for me this week, despite playing it later than Turbo. That's a real simple one. I know a lot of you experienced super coaches are all over that, but obviously we do have some people who don't obsess over super coaches as much as the likes of myself and some of you other hardcore listeners out there that need the common reminder to just, yeah, make sure you set up your team properly. Even more important in round one, because if there are any changes to final team lists, you want to have the flexibility to chop and change. So that, yeah, if you need to pivot from the player you've chosen, then you can do so, obviously. Yeah, again, I don't think this is going to happen, but if Morgan Smithies is not starting lock, I'm probably going to find another option here. you know, I might turn him into Jamin Salmon instead or whatever. But yeah, that's obviously a little bit extreme. Maybe not, but you get what I'm trying to say there. Another bit of strategic advice, I guess, is, you know, we've talked as super coaches get smarter and smarter with all the information that's out there. And don't get me wrong, I love it. It's great. Like, it's a good thing that we have more and more content out there. It can make it sometimes a little bit more difficult to set yourself out and you know, stand apart from the crowd. But one thing we're realizing is the crowd is getting smarter. So it's not a bad thing to play it safe, you know, play the vanilla option, play it with the straight bat, how, whatever analogy you want to use, it's okay to follow the crowd. It's still important though to, you know, if you do have certain pod options, as in points of difference that you want to chase after, if you're confident about it, then back your gut, go with it. It's important that, you know, there's no worse feeling in Supercoach than just thinking, I really like that player. My gut screamed at me that they were going to go fantastic from round one. And then you decided you want to be really plain Jane and decide to just follow the crowd. Don't go with the pod option. Stick with, you know, your RTSs or Taylor Mays in the center wing, for example, both over 40% rostered. And you know, rightly so. I can understand it. It's not a knock on them. But, you know, when there's 40% of the players who are going with, you know, Taylor May at that 458 price tag, if you got someone that you think will outperform Taylor May at a similar price tag, that's a lower roster percentage, then back your gut. You know, worst case scenario, Taylor May smashes it and you're going to be behind 40% of the pack. But maybe you're not, because the rest of your team might be balanced and you're still doing better overall than the other 40% that have Taylor May in that squad. Like, there's every year there's a popular player that the winner ends up not having from round one or whatever, or maybe they jump on later, or maybe they never get them in at all, but they still find a way to win. So I think that's something that I constantly have to remind myself when I'm panicking, like I am right now. I don't have Talon Man in my squad. I don't have RTS in my squad. Both are going to keep me up at night, but the way I've built my team and everything, and I'll go through it later, I'm feeling like it's probably better for me at the moment. Doesn't mean I can't change later, and by round three I've got RTS or Taylor May or whatever, but I'm going to start off round one without them and see how that goes. So one thing I would recommend, just as a kind of, just to see how your team lines up, is in your team, once you've set your 25, you can actually go to, you can sort it by roster percentage, right? You can go to list, I think, in your options or whatever. Hopefully you can figure it out, but if you go to list and you sort it, hopefully you've got SC Gold, you can look at this, but you can sort it by coach's choice, all coaches, and then it can show you, of the people in your squad, what the roster percentages are. Something that I find really useful is actually then looking at who are the players in your team that are hardly owned by any other super coaches out there. So, you know, from your 1% and 2% guys, those are obviously super pods, but anything really under 10% is already quite, you know, low roster percentage from round one, where we're all working with the same cap, we're all trying to find an edge on everybody else. So it's worth kind of looking at that, even under 15%. Like 15% is actually, sounds quite high, but I guess when you break it down, 15% might be like 20,000 teams, give or take, out of the 135 to 140,000 Supercoach teams that have entered. That's my assumption on how many teams are in the comp at the moment. We'll find out at the end of round one. But yeah, so it's not like everybody, and it's low enough that 20%, you know, if your sub 15% player goes big, then, you know, that's only 20,000 other people in your team, in all of Supercoach, that are benefiting from that player. So I think, yeah, identifying those guys that are, you know, less rostered in your squad, and then comparing to when you sort by the most rostered players in all of Supercoach, just trying to see who is it that is not in your squad that everyone else seems to have. So like I said, my example is very clearly right now, and it's, again, terrifying. I don't have Nathan Cleary in my team. That's, yep, I don't love that, but I currently don't have Nathan Cleary in my team. And then Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, next name. Taylor May is next name. And now currently no Jamin Salmon or Sean Lane. So now, the more I think about it, is I have taken quite a few risks here by skipping some of these guys. But I guess we'll just have to see how it goes. You know, for example, what I've done is instead of Nathan Cleary, RTS, Taylor May, Salmon and Lane, I've gone with, you know, less popular options such as Sua Wong and my front row forward punt of Tevita Totola, which was a bit of a risk in the end. I've got Brandon Smith, which partnered with Harry Grant meant I could dodge the Eels hooker drama there. And then I've got Greg Marju as my super pod at sub 6% roster percentage. Yeah, so there's a couple of things that I've done there, which is not always typical of how I play Supercoach. So, you know, obviously I'm trying to change things up and try some new things there. This could flop, this could pay off, I don't know. But yeah, we'll have to see. But I think it's helpful for you to know where those gaps are in your team and obviously where you're trying to set yourself apart. When you match it up and maybe you look at your pods then and you think, have I made a mistake here? Do I really like these guys that I'm risking ahead of these super popular options that can really hurt me? So like I said, the RTS and Taylor May thing is quite scary. Nathan Cleary, I'm terrified by because obviously he's in almost half of Supercoach's teams. But yeah, I'm backing the overall combination of my team hopefully to help me. Actually, I'll just take you through my team now. Hopefully that gives a bit more context to what I'm saying. So up top, I've got Brandon Smith and Harry Grant. So again, like I said last week, I was concerned about that cheapy situation. Ended up going with this so I don't have to worry about the Eels hooker situation, whatever, which obviously a lot of people are dealing with now because team lists for part two were named. And yeah, obviously that's what's happened. At front row forward, I've got Haas and Totola. And then I've got Farmacilli and Hughes as the front row forward three and four, my cheapies there. Like, I don't love Farmacilli, but yeah, just hoping because he's starting, he's going to get enough minutes to make some cash and hopefully move him on before the round eight bye for the Bulldogs. But yeah, Totola, certainly not sold on him, but he shouldn't go much worse than what he's done this week. And at the end of the day, he doesn't have any early buys. It's a position where I don't have to really worry about now, so kind of leaving it for now. In the second row forwards, I've got Piakura, Sua Wong, Lukey, Smithies, and then in the fifth and sixth positions, I've got Joe Chan and Viliami Fifita. Yeah, I mean, listen to the other episode if you want more detailed breakdown on why these guys are in my team as far as cheapies go. At halfback, I've got Nico Hines, and currently Drew Hutchison is my backup halfback. Yeah, don't love this. I previously had Cleary, but then after Teamless Tuesday, second part dropped, wrong cheapies didn't show up, etc., etc. I ended up having to take Cleary out. I went down to SJ, but then eventually I decided against SJ and to use the cash elsewhere, which I'll come to. But anyway, at 5'8", I've got Dylan Brown and Max Plath as my reserve 5'8". Again, refer to the other episode as to why Plath's here. Certainly don't have high hopes, just hoping he'll get through a 30 average, maybe 35 if I'm lucky, and pick up dual position by round 6. And hopefully I can move him around. Worst case scenario, if he flops, I got Ethan Strange at center wing. I can flick up and get rid of Plath to the best available cheapie that shows up around there. Then at center wing, so instead of SJ at reserve halfback, I've decided to use that cash for Greg Marju. Now, this isn't actually a reflection on SJ or anything like that. I think SJ is going to go great. It's more a case of, I think to balance my team, I was going cheap and nasty in the center wing. And I kind of felt at the end of it, if I don't have Cleary and to partner with Nico, again, not that SJ is poor, but I feel like I might be better off spending up so I've got a premium that, you know, SJ might always still be the third or fourth best halfback option behind Nico and Cleary. I just don't think he's going to ever overtake one of them. And at some point, I feel like SJ would turn into Cleary, especially like I've looked at Cleary's run after his bye and I thought I really need to have him by then. So to me, I thought if I end up spending a trade there to get SJ to Cleary, like, you know, that's something I'm going to have to plan for. Whereas this way, by using that cash that I was going to put with SJ, just using it on Marju, where Marju's got a chance to be top center wing again. Or at the very least, I mean, I can't see him not being one of the top four center wings by the end of the season, barring injury. So to me, I think he could also get off to a hot start. He's at lower roster percentage than SJ. And yeah, to me, I feel like that also balances my center wing a little bit more. And this would be one area of my team where I'm not actually going, you know, if I want to go from SJ to Cleary, that's going, you know, slightly sideways. If I'm trading someone else to Cleary, that's a definite upgrade. Marju might never leave my team because the Knights do have a pretty good buy schedule as well. they'll cover two of the three big buy rounds, and yeah, even their run home is quite nice. So yeah, it generally feels like it could be a season long keeper for me. So that Ponga Maju stack could be absolutely awesome. But yeah, like I said, I just gotta with this build, I've just gotta survive until after the round six bye. So five rounds of Cleary, where he's going up against the Storm, the Eels, the Broncos, the Roosters, Manly. Yeah, look, he could still turn up in any of those weeks, but I'm just rolling the dice, and you know, I just gotta hope that Maju can. If he matches Cleary, I'm laughing. If he gets close to Cleary, yeah, I'm still pretty happy. I mean, as long as he's not like dropping me a 50 average instead of Cleary's like 100 or something, I think I'll be okay to survive that. It's just going to come down to, yeah, overall team build, but keeping it going. So yeah, center wing's not great. I've got obviously Maju now, and then I've got Jesse Arthurs, Jack Bostock, Ben Trbojevic, and then Tua Pickey from the Warriors, Ethan Strange, and Jacob Gagai from the Bunnies, who's already played. So it is a little bit risky because I've got Tua Pickey and Gagai, who could potentially be by round four out of the respective teams. But I guess this way, you know, I'm going to feel comfortable rolling out Tua Pickey. He's got a solid floor. He might not have much of a ceiling, but if he goes out at 277K and gives me 40, 45 every week, I'll take that. You know what I mean? Like that's good value for the scores I might get, because, you know, these 600, 700,000 center wing guys could easily still only average 60, as we saw with Val Holmes last year. He averaged 61 for first five rounds. So then, yeah, rounding out the back, Ponga and Turbo as my two fullbacks. So it's a very much guns and cheapies kind of model, even though the cheapies we have this year aren't great. Obviously, yeah, my second row forward are full of mid-rangers, and then I've got Totola as well. But, you know, in terms of premiums, I've got Grant, Haas, Hines, Dylan Brown, Maju, Ponga, and Trbojevic. And there's a potential that those guys never leave my team. Probably not, but there is that potential. So I think that way, especially like Dylan Brown and Nico Hines, I could see myself just rolling with them all season. Maju could definitely be there all year. Harry Grant and Brandon Smith could just be my hooker combo for the rest of the year and not having to spend any trades there. So not guaranteeing it, but you know, I've set myself up so that I can have that option. And if they flop, I can downgrade. That's always easier, right? And it's always a good idea to start off more expensive and go down if we have to, especially if some cheapies that show up end up being must-haves. Anyway, that's where I'm at the moment. I'm still tinkering with the team, so no doubt this will change a few more times before final lockout. But yeah, hopefully that's been helpful for some of you. I know I do get a lot of messages asking to see what my team is. So yeah, one final plug for the Patreon, patreon.com/supercoachchampions. Check it out if you want to join up and be part of the Champs Discord, just be able to access other stuff that we do throughout the season. I'll definitely be able to give a lot more specific advice. I know I get a lot of questions, but I've been answering heaps on the Champs Discord. So apologies if you've been messaging me elsewhere. I don't check them anywhere near as much as I do with that Champs Discord. So yeah, anyway, good luck everyone with your final decisions. I'm keen to see the rest of round one play out. Catch you again soon.